means a lot to me. It's encouraging.
I am 66 years of age. And I am not going to retire. I tell people all the time, I don't want to die before I die. I don't want to die on the inside before I die on the outside. And I want to encourage every retired person in here and tell you how thankful to God I am that you are retired, and I know you're not retired in the kingdom of God. And so that's an encouraging thing to me. And we've got a lot of experience, a lot of years, and we need to be mentors and models for younger men and women. I still teach a high school Bible class, and I love it. A Monday night Bible study. And I love those high school kids, and I appreciate them, and pray that God will use all of us together. I want to turn to Isaiah chapter 6. And I want to read something. It's really important, because we're talking tonight about humility leads the lonely. Lonely people. And I want to read a statement that Isaiah the prophet made that's a little bit like what everybody in this room feels when they also see God. Isaiah 6:1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. That's what Bob prayed a few moments ago. We need tonight to see the Lord. We are sitting at the feet of God. You're not sitting at my feet. You and I are sitting at the feet of our God. And we're trying to learn who He is and what He wants. Isaiah said, I saw the Lord. And I don't know exactly all that's involved in him seeing the Lord. I do know that you and I have seen the Lord. It was with the eye of faith, but we have seen the Lord. And once you see Him, you're never the same. Never. And you see the Lord through Jesus. And once you see Jesus, and you hear of Him, and you see His life, and you see His death, and you see the way He treated people, and you see the way He respected God, no one can ever be the same. We want to see the Lord tonight. He said, when I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of His robe filled the temple, above Him were seraphs, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And I've tried to imagine what that would look like, but I never have seen a seraph, so I really cannot imagine what that looks like. But anyhow, here's some beings, and he's seeing these kind of angelic beings, and they were calling to one another, and here's what they were saying. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory. And it still is. Part of it is us being here tonight together. It's the glory of the Lord. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. Now, what is Isaiah getting ready to say when he sees that? Is he getting ready to say, look what a glorious sight? No. He says, woe to me. I cried. I've heard some people say, I'd just like to run up and give God a hug. Don't try it. It'd be like a glorified laser beam and you'd fry. Presence of God is not just something that you just kind of, you know, run up and give God a hug. God is the awesome, powerful God. Now you can give somebody else a hug in the name of God, and that'll be great. But God is awesome. God is powerful. And God is almighty. But God knows us. And here's what Isaiah said. I cried out, woe to me, I am ruined. You ever feel like that? I have. A lot of times. I feel like I'm just ruined. And all of it didn't happen when I was 30. I'm talking about last week. In fact, I'm talking about yesterday. And I won't mention today. But anyway, I am a man of unclean lips, he said. God, in your presence, I really see myself. I am a man of unclean lips. And I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. You ever feel like that? In the presence of God, I've got a feeling we'd feel kind of lonely. And undone. And we'd see ourselves like we really are. In fact, a lady came up to me this morning. She heard me preach Wednesday night. And she said, I want to tell you how much I thank God that the preachers are admitting they're wrong too. She said, I can't believe it. The preachers are saying they're wrong. She said, that really helped me for you to say that Wednesday night. And I told her that wasn't really all that hard to do. Because I know me. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here am I. Send me. That's basically where I am in my life right now. I'm saying to God, here am I. God, you send me. Peter in 1 Peter 5:5 says, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. One of the things I really liked about this week is we've all been able to admit we're humble. I've loved hearing these speakers talk about this because, you know, it's kind of crazy. We have somehow given a definition to the word humble that causes us not to be able to say that we are. And God says, if you're not, you can't even receive my grace. I want to announce to you tonight, I've decided to be humble. And when we get through reading what this all means and discussing it a little bit, you have too. Because certainly you have received the grace of God. You've received the forgiveness of your sins. You've received the blotting out of your past. You've received a purpose for the present. You know where you came from. You know where you're going. You know what your hope is. And to receive that, you have to be humbled. What's the last thing that really humbled you? I mean, it was something you could not do anything about. Maybe it was death. Death has a way of humbling us. May have been the hurricane. Maybe you were in the hurricane. Could you stop it? What could you do about it? Maybe it's a tornado. Maybe it's an earthquake. Maybe it's the birth of a baby. That'll humble you. I mentioned that last Wednesday night. You know, you see these fathers go in and they go through the Lamas. And by the way, I saw all three of my kids born. And you weren't supposed to during my time. I just told somebody asked me, I said, how did you go in and see your children born at that time? I told the doctor I was going to. And so I did. And that was amazing. And you know, That little thing comes out, and it's the worst looking thing you've ever seen in all of your life. And people just stand in awe, and they're humbled because of how little they had to do with it. That's really humbling, to have a child born, because it's the work of God. It's an amazing thing. What humbles us? It's a condition of heart, this humility thing is. It's a decision. It is an attitude of submissiveness. And nobody is born submissive. We learn submission, even Jesus, by what He suffered. I'm going to pray that God will give all of us just enough suffering to cause us to be humble. I want to pray that God will give us what we need and not what we want. What if God had given you everything you always wanted? Oh, what a mess that would be. James 4:10, humble yourselves before the Lord and He will lift you up. Everybody in here, if you tell the truth, I am so amazed that they asked me to speak on this workshop. That shows you how hard up they are. That's it. I cannot believe it, but the Lord will lift you up if you humble yourself. Basically, at the bottom of every problem we bring on ourselves is a lack of humility. Humility is a clear understanding of God and of Jesus and who they are, what they've done, and why we're here and what we're for. A human life is for something extremely wonderful. It's to glorify the God who made us. We're part of the creation of God. That's humbling. I love it. I just love it. I thank God for it. It's a participation in the suffering of others by choice. You say, well, frankly, Stanley, I just haven't really ever suffered much. Well, the people around you have. Participate. The thing about the child of God is he becomes aware of the fact that not all the suffering has to come to him. We need to go to the suffering. So many people never have seen the inner city because we have streets to go around it. And so many people don't have to fool with the poor because they never really have to connect with the poor. Humility helps us to connect with people not like us. And I thank God for that. I'm glad God would. What if He'd not connected with those not like Him? Aren't you glad Jesus connected with people not like Him? Otherwise, I'd be standing here lost, without hope, without God, without anything. And so I really thank God for this. Humility. How does it come? Comes a lot of ways. Comes usually by us facing things that we can do nothing about. It comes when the doctor walks in and says, you've got cancer. It comes when I told my wife about 10 years ago, I'm having trouble breathing. I can't breathe. I'd like to go to the hospital. Went to the hospital and you walk in a hospital and say, I cannot breathe. And they grab you quickly in the emergency room and start taking care of you in a hurry. And the doctor put me in intensive care and then sent me down to Dallas and had four little bypasses, kind of a little Roto-Rooter type thing, you know, bypasses, and got it all kind of unclogged. And boy, did I feel better. Not right at first, but it was a few days later. I really got to feeling good. And I was so grateful to God for that, I decided to humble myself in the eyes of the Lord and make my ministry the nurses and the doctors, because they were all in pretty bad shape. I was in bad shape physically, and they were in bad shape spiritually. And so I decided I had a brand new ministry opened up to me. And I got, first time I could get out of bed, I went to all the rooms next to me, and I said, I had this blooming thing, you know, that you have to roll around. It has, they have something in every hole in your body when you have surgery. And I rolled that thing around, and I went down to the other room, and I said, did they tell you to get up? And they'd say, yes. I said, get up. And they'd say, it hurts. I said, don't tell me. I can't even stand up straight. Then I went down to the waiting room, and I said, you got somebody in heart surgery? And they said, yes. And I said, I had it 2 days ago, and it works. Everything's going good. Doctor finally came in to me, and he said, do you want to be a chaplain or a patient? And I said, is there any way to do a little of both? And so God blessed that, because when you humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, He will raise you up, and you can love and help the people around you while they're helping you. And I think that's a beautiful picture of the way it ought to be in the kingdom of God. What's loneliness? Loneliness. Everybody in here knows what that is, but hardly any of us can define it. We know it. We have felt lonely. I think of Jesus, Matthew 26, Garden of Gethsemane. Can you imagine what it'd be like when these three guys, Peter, James, and John, can't even stay awake while you go off a little while and pray, and you know what's going to happen to you, and your heart is so filled with the deepest of sorrow. I'm quoting directly from what God says about that. Jesus had his heart filled deeply with sorrow, and here he is having to face the cross alone. I cannot believe it. Except that's exactly what would happen if he were to do it again. No, there'd be a few women there. I'm telling you, women have blessed my life more than men when it comes to developing faith. I don't know what they've done. I used to, when I was a young preacher, went to Abilene Christian, you know, got my degree in chemistry and decided to preach. And now I know, also I told somebody that really helped me a lot, because now I know the reaction of dirt on a broom when I'm sweeping out the church building. But anyway, it's a tremendous thing to go out and preach. And I'd go to places where the only people there were women. Only ones there. And I am thankful to God for women. What's loneliness? Some people help me describe it today. And by the way, there's not a way to not be lonely at times. I think loneliness is a great thing for us, because if properly understood, it drives us to God. It's lack of relationship. It's no one to share with. See if you felt any of these things. Just don't have anybody to share with. I don't have one really close friend. Now, I do. I do. It's being excluded, or the feeling of being excluded. It's feeling that you don't belong, that you're all alone. No one understands me or loves me. Isolated, forgotten, empty, misunderstood. And incidentally, I've got some more here, but before I finish the list, I just want to tell you, if you've ever felt that way, and who in here hasn't? You felt exactly like Jesus did during his life. Inability to communicate. Self-absorbed. insecure. Fear of being rejected. That'll bring loneliness. It'll cause a guy or a girl, a teenager, to do anything on earth. They'll put on the most stupid clothing made by human beings and put stuff all over their face. They'll wear anything. They'll do anything to be accepted because of loneliness. But so will adults. I guess you've noticed. So will adults. And the cure for loneliness is not trying to impress somebody else with our finesse, our macho attitude, body, feeling, mind. But it's turning to God and to people to serve them in the name of God. That's humility leading the lonely. How are we going to be humble? Who's going to do it? Do you help people be humbled? You say, well, no, I'm not about to humble somebody. Why not? Why not? God says it's helpful. Week and a half ago, something happened I got to tell you about. This bunch of Abilene Christian and Harding students came up for spring break campaign. When you high school kids get in college, if you go to one of those universities, why, be sure you come up to St. Louis for spring break campaign. John Dennis and Leonard Decker led that group, and what a group. Leonard Decker is blind. He has a guide dog. And that guide dog, that's the neatest dog I've ever seen. I didn't mean to look back here when I said dog, but the neatest dog I've ever seen in my life. That dog is wonderful. A yellow lab. I mean, that thing's in harness. You don't touch it. It is totally at attention, always doing the right thing, always caring, always seeing, always doing the best thing for Leonard. Get him out of the harness, he jumps up on you and plays and just has a fit. We kept Leonard and Coulter, the dog, in our house. In the mornings, I'd scream in the room and say, okay, Coulter, get him up. Old Leonard would jump up, Coulter would jump up, get old Leonard up. We'd go in, and I've learned so much about blind people to respect and love what that dog can do and what that man can do from that week together. Well, we wanted to take Leonard out to have dinner. Went to this little Chinese place in St. Louis. And we eat there a lot. And I know the people real well. Just good friends. We just have the best relationship. Know all the waiters and waitresses, the servers. Know the manager. Never had met the owner till this happened. But knew everybody. Went in there with that dog. And we walked in, and there weren't but two families sitting in there eating. And so I said, hello, Eddie. How are you? We came to eat tonight, and he took a phone call, and the people were coming in. Here was the dog, and so I said, Eddie, hi, how are you? And how are you guys doing, the rest of the people? And they would not seat us. I said, Eddie, this is my blind friend, and we want to have a seat in the restaurant. We took another phone call. I said, Eddie, we'd like to sit down. And we stood there. I said, would you, one of you guys, seat us, please? And they said, we can't until Eddie says so. I said, Eddie, we need to have a seat. And he said, I don't know about that dog. I said, it's a guide dog, Eddie. The law in Missouri is that you have to seat, in fact, it's in all the states, you have to seat a blind man and his dog, you know. And Eddie just kept taking phone calls. I said, Eddie, don't take another phone call. Just kind of, you know, seat us. And we just stood there. Now listen to me carefully. I learned how a handicapped person feels. And I was humbled and humiliated. So I said, let's go. And we left. Went over to another restaurant, and they just grabbed us in and had to keep them away from the dog. If they wanted to pet the dog all the time. That's why we had to keep him away, because when he's in harness, you can't pet him. And so we ate that night, and then I got to thinking, what am I going to do about that? Now, I'm giving you an illustration. We've learned what God says about humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. We've learned how that God gives grace to the humble. And what do you do about a situation when a man will not seat you in a restaurant? Now, there are a lot of options. I first got the law from Leonard. He has a book of laws in every state. I got that writing off on the copy machine. I went to the Rock Hill Police, where I live in St. Louis area, and I said, is this law here? Is this the law for this city? Yes. Oh, yes, of course. Ran into a policeman I know, and I started to call his name, I won't, but I went to a policeman that I know, and I said, say, the guys wouldn't see us last night over at this restaurant. He said, let me go with you. And that was one I knew I didn't need to take right there. He said, I can straighten that out. And I kind of wanted him to. You know what I mean? I'll have to go ahead and admit some of those feelings that kind of come up in you. And so then I decided I'd go. I went over and I went in to talk to Eddie. I said, Eddie, I need to talk to you. It was in the afternoon, no customers, but all the help. Everybody came in. I love Orientals. I've traveled in 89 countries of the world, and the Orient is my favorite place on earth. So keep that in mind as I speak. I said, Eddie, I want to talk to you. I've got to talk with you because there's several things that I really didn't like yesterday. And I've got to talk with you about them. You know, you wouldn't seat us. And he said, oh, yes, I would. I would have. I said, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't seat us. And I was very humiliated, and I was very embarrassed. And I really think you ought to apologize to my friend. He said, no, I will not. I said, now, Eddie, I know you're from, where are you from? Korea. Okay, you're from Korea. But now you're living in America. And in America, we have a law that says that guide dogs and blind people can come into a restaurant and eat. Okay? I said, in fact, I want to come in here and help you. I've come in to help you today. I'm your friend. We're friends, right, Eddie? Friends. Yes, we're friends. He said, oh, yes, Mr. Ship. We're friends. Good. Now, Eddie, I've got several things I want to help you with. One is, I want to help you learn the law. Because the law says you have to seat a man that's blind with his dog. He said, arrest me. Arrest me. I said, no, I don't want to arrest you. If I wanted to arrest you, I'd bring the law here. I want you to learn. Do you know this is the law? Well, I do now. Okay. Did you know it before? Well, I didn't know for sure. But do you know it now? I know it now. Okay. Number two, I want you to learn to be sensitive to the handicapped. I don't know what you do in the Orient. I know what we do in the United States. You are living here now, not there. And so what we do here is we give special treatment to the handicapped. Okay. And I said, number three, I want to teach you how to manage a restaurant. He said, I was busy on the telephone. I said, that's what I'm saying. And the other people couldn't seat me. Well, no, because I was busy. I said, Eddie, to be a good manager of a restaurant, you don't take the telephone calls to take the takeout food. You get the people to come over, and they do the phone calls while you seat the people. I want to teach you how to be a good restaurant manager. He wasn't in a receiving mood to receive that. Then I said, I also want to teach you how to admit wrong, because you said you weren't wrong, and I'm telling you were wrong. I'm the one you wronged. My wife and I felt humiliated and embarrassed, and I wanted to talk to you about this, because you shouldn't humiliate and embarrass people who come into your restaurant. The owner was sitting over there with two or three other guys from Korea. He couldn't speak English, but he came over and he told Eddie, and it was translated for me, "Apologize, Eddie. Apologize. Apologize." Eddie said, "No." I said, "You won't admit you were wrong." "No." I said, "We got a long wait. You better get me some food. I'm staying here till you do." It's going to be a long afternoon. You need to apologize. Because it's for your good, not mine. Well, it just got worse. I mean, that man says, I said, "I know how you feel." Because I always hear everybody say, people in the Orient don't like to lose face. I said, "I've got news for you. I don't know anybody who does. Nobody." Well, finally, I said, "Eddie, get me some tea. Because, man, I'm your friend. I'm going to stay here. We're going to work this out. I'm not leaving here until we get this worked out." Well, Eddie finally said, "Well, I'm sorry. You know, kind of muff." I said, "That's it. That's it. That's all it takes right there." "Okay, Eddie." Shook his hand. Oh, every one of the help, nobody in the kitchen, everybody was just standing out there. Everybody at work in that restaurant standing out there. And I got to thinking, and I said, "Boy, thank you, Eddie." And I shook his hand. I said, I'll convey that message to my friend. Then I walked out, got in my car, big knot in my stomach. And I said, "All right, what's next, God?" I said, "Well, let's see. Now, Jesus told us to be open with people in order to help them. He told us to confront people. That's what he did with his life for their good. He told us to be courageous and go to the people, not just go tell everybody else about it, but go to them. I could have chosen to write him up in the newspaper or, you know, do something like that, but I wanted to go to Eddie, try to help Eddie. I could have sought revenge. But Jesus said, don't do that." So I got to thinking, and I got to driving around because I didn't know what to do next, except I saw this flower shop. And I went into this flower shop and I said, "I've got to have a beautiful bouquet of flowers." Because I remember Jesus saying, "Do good for those who do wrong to you." So I went up to this girl who worked there and I said, "Let me have a beautiful bouquet of flowers." "Oh," she said, "for your wife?" I said, "Nope." "Oh, for your friend?" I said, "Nope, for my enemy." And she said, "For your enemy?" I said, "Yeah, I'll make it very special because it's for an enemy." She said, "You are by." I said, "I'll tell you about it later. Just get the bouquet ready." Got those flowers, went back to that restaurant, walked in the restaurant. Eddie came out, and so did everybody else. It's kind of like radar. They know when you're there. And we all gathered, and I said, "Eddie, I want to give you," and I put on the card to the China Inn, to Eddie and all the employees of the China Inn, and on the inside I put, "Your friend, Stanley Shipp." I gave him these beautiful flowers, set them down, and Eddie came across and he said, "This makes me feel guilty." I said, "Thank God. That's part of what it's for." And then he came over threw his arms around me, put his head on my chest, and said, I have never had anybody do anything like this before. And I said, Eddie, I kept telling you that it was God who wanted me to come to you. I told you that all during our conversation when I was here. It is God who wants you to learn these things, not me. It is God. And he says, I have never, ever received anything like this. I went back in just before I came to Tulsa. Shook hands with Eddie, asked him how he was doing, and he said, I'm doing wonderful. He said, but I'm worried about your wife. Is she okay? He's already picking up on caring for somebody else. And I said, Eddie, are you really okay? He said, yes. I said, did we learn some stuff? He said, yes, from God. I said, thank God for that. And I can't even tell you what I feel toward that man right now. Because I know that we have no right to retaliate. But we have no right to ignore. The easiest thing for me to do is walk out and ignore. Not go back and confront. And I believe that humility helped a lonely man that day in the name of God. One day, some people that are in our internship training program looked out their apartment window two streets away, and they heard some shots. And for those of you that are interested in coming to the internship, this is the only time that's ever happened that close. But they heard some shots, and they looked out the window and saw these men running. It's about 3 or 4 blocks away. We went over there real quickly and found out a man had come out and had shot a guy dead. He'd actually shot him and mortally wounded him. He ran across the street to go to a house, fell dead in their door, trying to get away. The father was shot of this boy, and he shot at the girl. But she jumped under a pickup truck and didn't get to hit her. It all happened because of a man living alone in a house, and this woman lived alone in this house, and they were neighbors. He wanted to date her because he was so lonely. And she didn't want to date him. And he kept asking her, and they'd meet in the yard, and he'd watch for her to come out, and he'd go out, and he worked, had a great job. She worked. They'd come in, he'd ask her for a date, she wouldn't go. Finally, she started dating another guy. He became so lonely and so filled with outrage and jealousy because of his loneliness that he planned to kill that man. And he did it. Stepped out in the yard with a shotgun, blew him away, wounded his father who happened to be with him, tried to kill her, threw his gun down, ran off. They caught him, put him in prison in the county jail. And that afternoon, one of the interns came in to me, a very beautiful girl, and said, I want to go talk to that man that committed that murder today. And I said, you want to do what? And she said, I want to go talk to that man. She said, you're always teaching us to love the oppressor as well as the oppressed, saying that's what Jesus did. I said, Sandy, you can't do that because he already has a problem with a woman, and we'll get two of our men to go. And so we did. We got our crack prison team, two guys who'd never talked with a murderer before. We do a prison ministry, but they'd never talk with a fresh murderer. And they said, what in the world do we do? What are we going to do? We go in there because what are we going to say? And I said, tell them you don't know what to say. Just go in there and tell this man that you want to help him and you want to be his friend, but you don't have any idea what to do or what to say. And they did. They walked in there and they started talking with this man. They asked if they could see him, and we have a prison ministry going, and they said, yes, you can see him. And so they went in and they sat down with the guy and they said, we do not have any earthly idea what to do or say, but we want you to know you've got two friends. See, the amazing thing about Jesus is he loves us even when we've done wrong. A lot of people are waiting to get good enough for God to love them. Well, forget it. The wait is over. You never will be. God so loved the whole world that he gave Jesus Christ for all of us, just like we are and were. I like that. And so here they were. They were talking to this guy. And they talked and they talked and they asked him, what's going on with you? You know, what happened? And he started talking to them. And when they got through, they talked for 1 hour. And before they left, he said, just a moment. I want you to know that I am 30 years of age, 30 some odd years of age, and that's the longest conversation I have ever had with another human being. My mother never talked to me. My father never talked to me. I never had a conversation that long. I can't thank you enough for coming and talking with me and letting me talk for 1 hour. I am so lonely. He said, will you please come back, and whatever it is that caused you to come here, will you tell me about it, because I want to do something like that. They studied God's Word together. They had him in a got in the back end of that jail in a very maximum security lockup. And after about a year, one day they came and said, Stanley, the man wants to be baptized, and the social worker won't let him out of the prison because of his deed, but we've got to get something there to baptize that guy. And one of them was an engineer, Rick Pagliuca. And I said, Rick, it's up to you. You know how to do stuff like this. He went down and bought a little inflatable swimming pool. And we took it inside the prison, and several of us were in there. And we blew that little thing up, and then we had one little old spigot from one little old lavatory, and we filled up that swimming pool and baptized that man into Christ. And just about to siphon that thing into the drain, well, really wasn't even a drain in that room. I'll explain that someday, but we got that thing stuck in another room into the drain and started to siphon it out, and the social worker came and rattled the keys on the jail door and said, wait a minute, there's another man that wants to be baptized. And I said, who taught him? You know, yeah, I've come to the realization that I don't have to do it all. But anyway, the idea is somebody, he'd been reading his Bible. He said, I want to be baptized too. I heard someone was being baptized. I want to be forgiven. I want to be in God's kingdom. They brought that man in, and we baptized him into Jesus Christ. That man was lonely too. But I'm just trying to say, when you can humble yourself and go into a person and say, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to say to you, but I do love you because God has loved me. Wonders are worked. And we're living in a country and an age in which everybody's got to know how to do everything. Forget it. Just let people know that God sent you. Just tell them. They say, what'd you come up here for? Just say, oh, God sent me. God sent me. What for? To tell you there is hope. Those are the most amazing words on the earth. You let somebody be despondent, dejected, lonely, depressed, whatever. Someone come in and genuinely get across the message that the God of heaven sent somebody by to tell them there's hope. That is helpful. I'm going to ask you to do something that I've never done in all of my life. got a little foster grandson named Scotty. Scotty was born in a toilet. His mother was on crack cocaine. She went into the bathroom, thought she'd just gone to the bathroom, had him in the toilet with the afterbirth. Got up and left, and her mother came in to use the bathroom and found him weighing less than 2 pounds floating on the afterbirth. Cut the cord, took him to the emergency room, and he lived. He's 4.5 years old now. They found out 2.5 years ago that he had leukemia. My daughter and son-in-law took him. Penny and Alan McElroy took him into their home, along with another little boy they've had for 10 years. And they've raised him. He has leukemia. They take him to the doctor 5 days a week for chemotherapy. I just called Penny this afternoon, and they had to give him another blood transfusion yesterday. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about in your family. And I've never asked anybody to do this in my life, but I want everybody here that's got a pencil or a pen to take it out and get a piece of paper, please. And I want Scotty to get 5,000 cards. I want to give you the address. I want to give you the name and the address. Now write it down, please. I beg you. You ever seen a grown man beg? I am begging. S-C-O-T-T-I-E, Scotty McElroy, M, capital M-C, capital I-L-R-O-Y, Scotty McElroy. Here's the address, 1235-1235 Courtright, K-O-R-T-W, St. Louis, M-O, for Missouri, M-O-63119. Now, I'm begging you to send him a card. They don't know a thing about it. I'm not going to say a word to anybody from St. Louis. Don't say a word. I can't wait till those cards just start coming in. And I can't wait till Penny and Alan start asking, where did these come from? I think that's going to be a neat surprise, because Scotty probably won't live. He didn't have too much of a chance to live. He's the neatest kid. It takes a while to get over that chemotherapy every day, and then he gets over it and he kind of comes out. I was with him 2 or 3 days ago, and I said, Scotty, and he was carrying a bag that's pumping antibiotics into his, what do you call that thing? What? Metaport, yeah, into the Metaport. They developed that thing on a spaceship. That's one of the good things about that space industry. Helps so much in the medical field. And it's just amazing. I know Scotty's taking all that stuff. I said, Scotty, come here, see Papa. And in church, he'll scream clear across the audience, Papa! And we have more fun together. The whole family does. God blesses it. But it humbles you to see a child that you can do nothing about. Doesn't it? Many of you know. And I love you for it. And you've made plenty of lives happy. When sometimes you've been lonely while you're doing it. But humility leads the lonely. I was driving down the street and looked over. In fact, I was going to jog because my wife told me to. And I like to jog, walk, and stuff like that. But I like to do other stuff too. I like what I do. I love to train people in the kingdom of God to go take the gospel to start new works all over the world. Last one in Thailand, and next one in Togo, West Africa, and a bunch of those people are in this audience, and a bunch of people going to Romania, and I just love to my wife and I love to pour our lives, just like you do, into the lives of younger men and women and watch them take the good news of Jesus Christ to high schools. In fact, my granddaughter down here, Stephanie, sitting down here, she wrote me a note recently and says, I'm the eighth wonder of the world. Now, it's not true. I know better than that. But boy, it sounds good. It just sounds good. But I was driving down this street and looked over, and just before I turned the corner to go to the park, I looked, and here was the most hideous one human being, a man, that I'd ever seen in my life. His face was totally burned off. Looked like he was sick. And I said, you will go jogging. Because you told Marie you would. And I turned the corner and I said, hypocrite. Priest. Levite. Pass by. Let him fend for himself. You ever talk to yourself? Better try it. And I said, turn around. And I said, I'm on a jog. And I said, no, you're not. And I turned the thing around, went in the 7-Eleven parking lot, turned around, went back, and he's getting up. And I opened the door and I said, are you okay? And he said, oh, sort of. And I said, get in. He got in, turned his face toward the window because he didn't want me to see his face. And I shook hands with him, and there was nothing but just a little nub of about 2 or 3 fingers and just nothing on his hand. I said, man. I said, my name's Stanley. He said, my name's Jack Stanley Reeves. I said, I'm glad to meet you. He said, yeah. Lips burned off. Some people in this audience know him from Maryland Heights Church of Christ in St. Louis. By the way, you either hear somebody from St. Louis tonight, or you don't hear anybody. Jerry Jones and I have got it covered. And I'm thankful to God. Anyway, he told me to say that. But anyway, I asked this man, where are you going? What do you need? He told me where he was going, and I started talking with him, and I said, I want to hear your story. He said, no, you want to know why my face is burned off. And I said, I certainly do. I'd like to know. And we started talking, and he told me where he wanted to go, and I thought, my land, that's in a real good section of St. Louis. What in the world is he doing living over there? Found out, really, his family does live there, but he was living in an abandoned service station. I said, man, you're the very guy I need to speak to the interns. We're always looking for people that they can really connect with who are not exactly like them. And I said, man, you've obviously had some experiences in your life they haven't had. We're inviting you right now. And he said, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, I said, yeah, come on. And so we talked and got over there, and he showed me. But we started to get out of the car, and I said, where do you get your money to live? He said, Salvation Army gives me about 60 a month. And I said, well, I've got 5. I'll just give you this 5 and you just spend that any way you want to. I will not deliberately buy somebody a can of beer or a bottle of whiskey or something. But I'll tell you what, I'm not nearly as interested as I used to be in how they're going to spend it. Because I got to thinking about God entrusting me with some money and didn't tell me how to spend it. He even trusted me to spend it right, and I don't do it right all the time. But he still gives me some more. So I figure if I do something wrong and somebody spends it wrong, that they're a whole lot more like me than I thought. So I just threw that in. That doesn't cost anything extra. That's free. But anyway, I said, here's $5. And he reached up there with those 2 nubs and pulled out a package of cigarettes. And he said, all I've got is some cigarettes. You want to smoke? And I said, no, I don't care for a cigarette. Thanks a lot. And he said, well, take one anyway and give it to somebody who's down and out. So I took it. I almost smoked it. And then I took it, and I've got it framed on my wall in my office with the scripture, "Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, I give to you." So I look up at that all the time, and I say, "Stanley, who do you think you are?" Well, then I lost track of him. He showed me his place. It was an empty garage, an empty shed for that used oil. That's where he was sleeping and using the bathroom and everything else, and he was kind of proud of it. I went in, chatted with him for a while, and that little place barely long enough for him to lie down, and then I started hunting for him. I was going to take my grandkids to see him and get him to come. He just disappeared. Finally, one day we started out of the office not long ago, and Bob Gregg and read this prayer, and Jeff Kreider, and Bob said before we left, he said, "Does anybody here know Jack Stanley Reeves?" I said, What did you say? "That's him. That's the man." I said, "We're not going to go to lunch. We're going to go find him." We went and found him at a pharmacist. He'd called me. Called the church. Man, I ran in, grabbed him around the neck. That pharmacist looked, you know, and thought, "What is this?" I said, "Where have you been?" I said, "I am mad at you. Where have you been? You told me you'd get in touch with me and you didn't do it." I said, "I'm so glad to see you, I can't stand it." We got in the car and I said, "Jack Stanley, what do you want?" He said, "I want 2 nights in a motel to get off the streets and be able to sleep without someone fearing that someone's going to kill me." I got to thinking, that's just what Maria and I like to do. You know, your first thought could be, of all the nerve, who wouldn't like to spend 2 nights in a motel? Then I got to thinking, nobody I know wouldn't like to spend 2 nights in a motel. So I said, "You got it. You name the motel." I'll tell you why I'm not lonely. Often, I don't have time. Neither will you. Neither do you. But we've got to think about the other people. We took him out, walked in with him to that motel, said, "This is my friend. He wants to stay in this motel, and here's the money." Somehow I keep getting the impression that little statement from Jesus in Matthew 10, "Freely you have received, freely give," is true. And last night, when these people all started coming up here putting money in there, I went to pieces and cried like a baby at the sight of something that beautiful. Humility leads the lonely. You know I'm not talking about severe clinical depression or mental illness. I'm just talking about most of us who are so hung up on ourselves that sometimes we really don't let that wonderful part of us that God's put in there just come out and love and help the people. Got a friend, Jim Massey, down here, sitting right over there. He and his wife, in the congregation where they worship, I imagine you'll probably want to go and place membership there when you hear about this. But they went out and had a couple of nights in a motel and kind of got away from it, got somebody to keep the kids. And they decided they just wanted to do that for anybody else in the church that wanted to do that. They would keep the kids for them and pay for the motel. That's a pretty good deal. You know how many people took that up? One. Do you know it's hard to receive? Humility leads us to receive the gift of God, regardless of what it is.
Maybe you have a heart that wants to do something like Jim did and his wife, Barb. Or maybe someone wants to do it for us and we don't let them. Either way, I pray that God will humble us so He can raise us up. I want to close this tonight with a story. I like to read the Bible and then I like to see it put into life. Marie and I were over in Bangkok, Thailand. And we started to get on the plane, went out to the airport real early. In Bangkok, it pays to go early. It takes you an hour and a half, 2 hours to get out to the airport. Anybody who's been to Bangkok knows that. So we got out there, but it didn't take that long. So we're 3 hours early, and we're flying Turkish Airlines and going to Istanbul and to Tel Aviv. And so here we were, and we got there, and I went up to this desk, you know, where they check you in, take your baggage, and nobody was there. So I said, I'll just stand here and keep our bags. And Marie said, but I'll just go around and do some shopping. And it was about 11 o'clock at night or something like that. And I was standing there, and here came two women, about 30, 35 years of age, and had these huge backpacks. We're talking biggest ones. And they walked up, you know, with those things, just walked up with them and then sat them down. And I said, well, hello, do you speak English? And they said, of course we do. And I said, well, where have you been? Well, where do you live? They live in Tel Aviv. Oh, I mean, at Jerusalem. I said, oh, that's where we're going. They said, oh, great. I said, well, where have you been? To Tibet. Trekking in Tibet. By the way, that's in. If you didn't know it, you ought to get you a ticket and go over and spend 3 or 4 weeks trekking in Tibet. They said it was great, especially at high altitudes, because you can hardly breathe. And it just almost made me want to do it. But anyway, but they were really cool. They were cool Jewish women. Wonderful, cool women. 35, strong, healthy. Love to do the hard stuff. And so we talked for a while, and I told them that sounded really exciting, and they told me about all their experiences, and finally they said, what do you do? And I said, I go all over the world telling people that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, the Messiah. They said, you do? I said, that's right. And they said, would you go to China and try to change people in China to become Christians? And I said, oh, yes. They said, you would try to change people? And I said, oh, yes. If it's changing into the likeness of Jesus Christ, yes. They said, we don't like that. And I said, what is it you don't like about it? And they said, we don't think it's right to change people. We don't believe it's right to change people. And I said, I do. I said, you must not know Jesus. And they said, we don't like that. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what I'll start doing then. I'll do exactly what you do. I will go tell people, don't change. And I will go to Germany, and I will tell the Germans, go back like you used to be and kill the Jews. And they said, that's not what we had in mind. I said, I guess not. You didn't want people to change. I believe you. I'm going to do what you tell me to. I'm going to tell everybody who's doing anything wrong not to change. They said, no, we didn't. That's not what we mean. And I said, well, let's talk about what we mean. And we did. And that conversation got so good, it was absolutely uncanny. It was wonderful. We had the best time you've ever seen. They said, we'd never thought about the fact that people really do need to change. And I said, of course they need to change. And the only thing we got to find is, into whose image do they need to change? And I am in love so much with Jesus, I am just as courageous with Jesus as you are telling me that you don't think anybody ought to have to change. I said, Jews are not the only courageous people in the world. So are some Christians. And so, we became good friends. And by the way, that's not an anti-Semitic statement. I love them to death. There is no Jew or Gentile in Christ Jesus. There's no bond nor free. There is no black nor white nor yellow nor red nor anything else in Jesus. And I am thankful to God for that. And I pray to God. By the way, those two women, man, they hung around us. We had the best time. Got on the plane. Almost had to stay in Istanbul because we missed a plane. They said, if we stay in Istanbul, would you take us around and show us some things? I said, sure. I'd be glad to. My wife and I, we'd love to. We had the best time. And those two women, I pray, will someday become followers of Jesus. And they're wide open to that right at the moment. And I am thankful to God. So I want to close this by telling you that God resists the proud. I want to tell you about one last story. This is it. You cannot get me to tell more. I will not. I want to tell you about the neatest country, one of the neatest countries I've ever been in. And that country is Romania. I want to tell you six things about Romania that I've never seen in a combination in any other country in the world. Maria and I have been there three times in the last 9 months. Ceausescu, that dictator, oppressed them. And here, and these couples are going over to Romania in a few weeks to live there for several years, to keep on announcing good news. The largest congregation of the Church of Christ in Europe is in Bucharest, Romania, after less than 2 years. 300 members of the church there. And it's the most amazing thing. I can't believe it. Yeah, that's right. To God. That's right. Here's Romania. Listen to these things. They are broken. That dictator broke their hearts. And did you know that he thought he was doing it to build a super race? And he did it. And guess who's using it to his own glory now? God. Did you know God can't get into any heart until it's broken? That's what humility means. Broken heart. They are broken. Number two, they are poor. We're talking poor. Medical doctor makes $50 a month. Engineers, $50 a month. Broken and poor. They are intelligent. I go over there and you sit there on a train, and I said, I live in Missouri. This guy said, Jefferson City. I said, what are you talking about? He said, that's the capital of Missouri. I said, who do you think you are? And he said, well, I'm a college student. I'm an engineering student. I said, how'd you know that? And he said, ask me any state. He knew the capital of every state in the United States. I said, you don't know the capital of Togo, West Africa. He said, Lome. And I said, shut up. And anyway, you feel inferior all the time around them. They are the most intelligent nation of people I've ever been in. They are trilingual in the third grade. Speak French, English, and Romanian. They are believers in God. The Romanian Orthodox Church, not to be confused with other churches in the area of countries around them, those grandmothers would take those boys when they got back in from the embassy or from the military. They'd bring them into the house and say, "You believe in God." They'd keep the grandkids and taught all the grandkids about God. Dale McAnulty says he's never taught a Romanian doctor, engineer, any professional person, or anybody else that did not already believe in God. He's never had to teach anybody to believe in God. And they just don't know who God is. And we get to help announce that. And they are survivors. That's what we need to be. If you want to hear more about Romania, we've got a little... What's our booth number? 34? 204. Go by there and pick up a brochure about... In fact, everybody in this place could go and help teach the gospel of Jesus Christ in English to Romanians. And you could leave tomorrow, get off the plane, and within 2 hours be doing it. It's a pretty neat deal. Well, we want to remember each other. And I want to tell you, if you need to respond to the call of Jesus Christ tonight to become a Christian and become a part of humbling yourself in the eyes of the Lord, and He will lift you up. Or if you have some need for prayer, you're invited to come while we stand up and sing this invitation song.